Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Jonathan de Burka-Butler is back with us after a brief sojourn away to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Malawi we're going to go to next. And I think you touched on this before, but now there's a result in this trial of these three people who killed a person with albinism. But there is a wider issue with this as
Yeah, there is really. I mean, when we talk about, in this particular start, when we talk about albinism, we've covered a number of countries, Tanzania, Malawi, Mozambique, a bit in Burundi as well. So there's a disproportionate amount of people with albinism in sub-Saharan Africa, okay, because of ethnicities and the gene that they carry and that kind of thing. So, for example, in Tanzania, one in every 1,400 person that's born there is born with albinism. So, you know, as opposed to one in every 20,000 in Northern Europe or something like that, right? And it is particularly relevant for this particular story because, of course, there's an awful lot of untruths that are made up about them. There's sort of witchcraft, witch doctors that basically say that if you kill people with albinism, and if you cut off their limbs, we turn them into lucky charms, amulets, and those kind of things, and they bring you wealth and they bring you, you know, good luck and that kind of thing. And in recent years in Malawi, there's been an upsurge in the amount of murders and the amount of people that have been attacked with albinism. And as a result, the government of Malawi have decided to take measures against those who commit the crime, these crimes. Okay, so last Tuesday, the High Court, who had recently found three people guilty of murdering a man in 2015, basically they hacked off all his limbs and they buried the rest of his body in a garden. And they sentenced these three people to, the judge sentenced these three people to death last Tuesday. So it's all pretty grim. Now, they weren't the first group. They were, in fact, the second group of people to be sentenced to death. Earlier in May of this year, there was a man who was also sentenced to death for killing a teenager with albinism. So basically, when he delivered his sentence, the judge said that this would act as a deterrent, or at least he hoped it would. So that's where we're at. The only problem that they have in Malawi is that there's nobody to actually carry out the execution. There hasn't been an execution in the country since 1994. So it's been a while, 25 years. So they are going to have to get somebody to apply to become a state's executioner and to carry out these executions.
Oh dear.
Yes.
They actually have to hire rather than...
Well, I assume they could bring somebody in.
I think the peer points used to kind of be, you know, freelance out to kill
indeed.
People.
I know there's a shortage of executioners in Saudi Arabia, but perhaps somebody could go over from there and do what's needed to be done. But that would be an avenue that they... This is pretty dark the way we're discussing this, but that could be an avenue that they could go down, all right. But as it stands, they've asked people to apply for the job.
Yeah, now it's a strong stance to take, but at the same time, these murders seem to be prompted by kind of just basic superstition.
Yes.
And it's hard to counter that, really.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, this is the argument. And it's interesting because the association of people living with albinism, and there's a couple of NGOs in the area, have basically welcomed this. And it's not, they haven't turned around and said, oh, it's a bit harsh, or we don't agree with the death penalty. They've welcomed it. And they are hoping that something like this, these people will work as an example and that the crime will stop, but we'll see.
Yeah, right. Lesotho, we're going to go to you next. And this is an interesting story because I suppose we hear a lot about the conditions perhaps your iPhones are made in, but not jeans. And this is to do with Levi's and Wrangler.
Yeah, this is a story based in Lesotho, which is landlocked country in South Africa, or surrounded by South Africa, a population of about 2.2 million people. And it's fairly dependent on two things: miners that go into South Africa and send money back, basically, and then the garment industry. So they have about 50,000 people working in that industry, right? So it makes a lot of money for them, relatively speaking. And there's lots of companies there. The ones that we're focusing on are Levi's, Wrangler, and a company called The Children's Place. And they have a factory there, three factories there, that is actually run by a Taiwan-based jeans manufacturer, okay, called the Nian Haising Textile Company. Cut a long story short, a group, again, again, an NGO called the Workers' Rights Consortium, which is Washington-based and has been around since about 2000, went into these three factories that are run by these companies, and they started to interview the employees, specifically female employees. And they found that there was effectively systemic sexual abuse in these factories. They found that managers would basically threaten women, would bring them home and say to them, look, you have to have sex with me or we won't renew your contract. Mm. And this sort of trickled down then into the male colleagues that worked with these female workers. So they also started treating them very badly, sexual harassment, unwelcome sexual comments and the like. So they Workers' Rights Consortium ran an investigation, and they found that this was endemic in these factories.
And has the owner of the factories, have they made any response to this?
Yeah, so Levi's and Wranglers obviously came back and they said that this was unacceptable. So they've put together various different, they put together a statement basically saying that they wanted women and all workers to feel safe, valued and empowered. And they've put together various different agreements and bodies to basically check and monitor any future complaints that are coming about, and also bodies that will ensure, they say, that managers won't intimidate people who make complaints. So they are taking measures against it, which I suppose you'd have to sort of look at and say, okay, well, fair enough.
Mm. But they haven't fired anybody?
Not so far.
No. Well, that's kind of a bit rubbish then, isn't it, really? Sorry. Yeah. Also, as a side note, it's interesting that Levi's and Wranglers, which I thought would be competing brands, are made actually by the same company.
Yeah, but there you go. I'm sure that's not the only case of that, but yeah.
Right, Brazil, we're going to go to next. And Norway has stopped donations to the Brazilian government. I didn't know they were making them.
They were, yeah. They do this to a few countries around the world, actually, the Norwegians. I don't know whether it's because of they feel guilty because they make a lot of oil and that kind of thing, but they kind of seem to think that if they give a lot of money away, it offsets their sort of environmental damage that they do through oil and various other things. So one of the things that they contribute to, and they're a big contributor to, they've given about over $1 million or $1 billion over the last 10 years, is this thing called the Amazon Fund.
Right.
And as we know, because we've spoken a little about it before, our new president in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, our new favourite person on the show, on this particular slot, is not a major fan of environmentalism. And in fact, he has specifically stated that he would like to go into the Amazon and basically get rid of it all so he could get more beef, effectively, right? So anywhere he can, he tries to scupper efforts to look after the Amazon. And there had been discussions over the last number of weeks around how this particular fund was governed. Bolsonaro wanted to reduce the amount of people on the steering committee. The Norwegians and the Germans, who are another big contributor, didn't like this. Bolsonaro then decided to scrap the steering committee altogether, or suspend it. And the Norwegians have said, right, that $33 million that we were going to give you, we're not going to give you. And the Germans followed suit in the same week. So this has all happened very quickly and within the last couple of days. So what's going to happen to that fund in future, which manages about 103 projects across the rainforest in Brazil, is in trouble.
And in a way, though, doesn't that just play into his hands? Because that money was used to preserve the Amazon, which he doesn't give a toss about. He doesn't want to preserve the Amazon, so happy days for him.
Yeah, it's absolutely playing into his hands, and that's probably the reason why he was so quick to get rid of that steering committee. You know, they, the Norwegians, the Germans weren't happy. Bolsonaro said, "Well, if you're not happy, you can go off." And in fact, he said about Norway, he suggested that they take that money and help Angela Merkel reforest Germany. He also pointed out that that Norway is quite good at killing whales in the North Pole. And that's actually quite a good point, because they did up their quota by 28% last year. So, his responses would suggest he doesn't really care.
Yeah. Has he made any statements about climate change one way or the other? Does he believe in it?
I'm not sure about that, to be honest with you. But the language coming out of him has given farmers and miners license to go into areas that they wouldn't have gone into under the last government of Dilma Rousseff, that kind of thing. And they are doing that. So, for example, since January of this year, where are we now? We're August. So from January to July, an area the size of Meath has been taken out of the Amazon forest by farmers. And that is up nearly 300% from the year before.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Myanmar, or Burma, depending which one you like, we're going to go to next. And rebels have killed 15 people.
Yes, mainly military. And this is significant because it is a surge in violence, really. So there's a group that's been around since late 2016 called the Northern Alliance. I don't need to go into them all, but it's basically four different groups who came together from four different parts in northern Myanmar, all looking for various levels of autonomy for their own ethnic groups. Okay, yeah. And so they've come together, and they. What's interesting about this, it seems to have been a coordinated attack. So there was an attack that was done on a Defence Services Technological Academy, so it's basically engineers, and there was a couple of people killed there, and then there was three or four other places in the surrounding area. But it marks the end of a months-long ceasefire, which was due to end in June and was extended. But now this Northern Alliance have decided that they are going to take on the army because they say that the army are operating in a way that they shouldn't be in these territories that, you know, that the Northern Alliance really are trying to control. So it's not good because, you know, there's 750,000 refugees in Bangladesh that they're trying to get back in. These are Rohingya refugees from Bangladesh into Rakhine State. Aung San Suu Kyi, under a lot of international pressure, but she's also domestically under an awful lot of pressure because, you know, she's trying to juggle the new civilian government with the army, who are practically, you know, still running
still the
show.
And
then all of these different militant groups that are all grappling for their own states, really.
Yeah. It's a bit of a mess, all right. Right, Samoa, we're going to go to you next. And three people have been arrested in a plot to assassinate the Prime Minister.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So the Prime Minister is 74-year-old Tui Laepa Sailele, and he's been there since 1998. He's obviously fairly popular with certain people in Samoa, but with others, it would appear he is not. And it seems that three men have now been charged. Police launched an investigation after a tip-off that they received, from a village council of elders, basically, who told them, we've uncovered some sort of a plot to assassinate him. Now, we're not 100%, the police aren't saying that much, but the only thing that they're saying is that they're investigating social media accounts from both inside the country and outside the country. And we know that on a visit to Australia last year, this Prime Minister was attacked by a man who threw a pig's head at him, and he was subsequently arrested and fined.
Okay. Does that have some
charged.
Meaning? Or is
well,
just,
yeah, oh, it yeah. would. It, yeah. It would, you know, it would have some significance, all
yeah.
right. But there is a suggestion in some parts of the media that this man, the same man, might be connected in some way with this plot to get rid of the Prime Minister.
Yeah, okay. And finally, interesting in the context of Brexit, the British Army, the numbers have fallen.
Yeah, that's exactly why I thought this was a relatively interesting story, because I would have thought with all the nationalism and other stuff that they're coming out with, that the numbers would be going up and everybody would be ready to join the army. But obviously, the prospect of going to war with America and Iran isn't appealing to everybody in the near future. But anyway, for the ninth consecutive year, the numbers in the British Army has actually fallen. So their target is 82,000, but they're 7,000 short of that. They have a HR group, Capita, who got a contract worth nearly £500 million a number of years ago. And they have not hit their target so far at all, apparently. So they might need to look for another contractor.
Right, indeed. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us. Jonathan De Burka Butler there, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.